From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. With the launch of her exploratory presidential committee on New Year's Eve, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren has been among the first to jump into what is sure to be a crowded field of Democrats vying for their party's 2020 nomination. In a 4.5-minute video, Warren laid out in clear terms her progressive agenda for a people-centered economy. It was a big improvement on the video she published last fall as part of her widely criticized response to President Donald Trump's false accusations about her Native American ancestry. On Wednesday, Warren hired several staffers in the key electoral state of Iowa, including the person who managed the 2016 Iowa caucus campaign for Senator Bernie Sanders, and the woman who helped Barack Obama win Iowa in 2008, Emily Parcell. Warren this week also announced her backing for a Green New Deal. My guest is Doug Henwood, political economist, editor of Left Business Observer, author of After the New Economy, as well as My Turn, Hillary Clinton Targets the Presidency. He's also the host of a weekly radio show on Pacifica called Behind the News and a frequent guest on our program. Welcome back, Doug.
Always good to be with you.
So we shouldn't, of course, be at all surprised that Warren has thrown her hat into the ring. Maybe surprised that it came this early, but in launching that video last year where she explained her reasons for taking a DNA test, that certainly seemed very much like the first step towards a presidential bid, right?
It did. That was a very unfortunate and sad thing when she fell for that. She let Trump get under her skin and produced a very embarrassing, that genetics test, but the whole claims of Native ancestry, all very sad and depressing, and showing not much understanding of how American Indians see themselves. So it's just all a sad story all around, and I just I hope we can put that behind us. But I think I'm already bored of the 2020 campaign. We've got 2 years of it to go.
Right. And I want to definitely talk about the DNA test a little bit in detail in a few minutes, but let's talk about the fact that it is, she announced it on the last day of 2018. This is going to be a nearly 2-year-long campaign. On the one hand, I feel like, oh God, can we survive this? But on the other hand, it's been a very long 2 years. And I almost feel like it's a good problem for us to have in the Trump era, to have alternatives to who could be in the White House showcase why they would be better than Trump. I don't know, am I being optimistic?
Well, I can always use that. I tend towards pessimism, so I always need, some sort of uplift and a reminder that not all is gloom and doom. So thank you for that. I appreciate the the pep talk. But God, the American political system, it just gets, grinds on, with these endless, expensive and tedious processes. It's just, I wish we could have some better way of doing politics in this country. It's very depressing.
Well, Warren is certainly somebody who has very strong progressive credentials. Now, let's remind ourselves about the role that she played before she became senator, right? Isn't she, before she became senator, best known for being the person who helped create the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau? She should have led that bureau, but then Obama basically caved to the financial industry lobbyists. And then and didn't give that to her. But that isn't that her crowning achievement, which says a lot about where she's coming from politically.
There's a lot I really admire her about her. She was on my radio show very frequently, late 90s, early 2000s, talking about bankruptcy reform. That's where she made her academic reputation, I think, since she came to the attention of Dr. Phil, who launched her to a new level of fame. But I always found her extremely intelligent, smart, warm, decent, generous, I really got quite fond of her because we used to talk not just for the interviews, but we'd talk on the phone. She would, we'd email back and forth. She gave me a lot of good gossip about which Democrats were selling out to the credit card industry. The work she did on bankruptcy, her academic work that came before it, in the late 90s was really first rate stuff and a very important corrective to the financial industry's story of the rise in bankruptcy rates was just due to the decay of morality and a growth in profligacy. And she said, no, people are broke and credit cards are usurious and we need to think about this far more seriously. So personally, I found her very likable and her policies were excellent in that area, and they remain quite excellent. Wall Street hates her, which is one of the, you know, the strongest things in her favor, and they hate her still, and they're very scared that not only of her candidacy, but the effect that she will have in the Democratic field. They're afraid that she and Sanders together will force the Democrats to be far more hostile to Wall Street than they would be if left to their own devices. So, you know, it's nothing but good to me. And I have reservations about her politics in other areas, but I can never launch into a critique of her the way I did with Hillary.
Right. Yes, you wrote a whole book about that. So on Warren's positions on progressive politics, specifically her economic positions. This is her greatest strength, and it's arguably the single most important issue facing ordinary Americans. I want to play for you and our audience the opening minute of her video that she basically used to announce that she was launching a presidential bid. It's interesting these days, right? We have a president who relies so much on social media, but others are also discovering this is a great way, especially if they put some resources into it, to target Americans as widely as possible. So this is what Elizabeth Warren put out to announce her presidential bid.
In our country, if you work hard and play by the rules, you ought to be able to take care of yourself and the people you love. That's a fundamental promise of America, a promise that should be true for everyone. Growing up in Oklahoma, that promise came through for me and my family. After my older brothers joined the military and I was still just a kid, my daddy had a heart attack and couldn't work. My mom found a minimum wage job at Sears, and that job saved our house and our family. My daddy ended up as a janitor, but he raised a daughter who got to be a public school teacher, a law professor, and a senator. We got a real opportunity to build something. Working families today face a lot tougher path than my family did. And families of color face a path that is steeper and rockier, a path made even harder by the impact of generations of discrimination. I've spent my career getting to the bottom of why America's promise works for some families, but others who work just as hard slip through the cracks into disaster. And what I've found is terrifying. These aren't cracks that families are falling into, they're traps. America's middle class is under attack.
And that is Elizabeth Warren, at least the first minute or so of her 4.5 minute video that she used to announce that she was considering a run for the president. My guest is Doug Henwood. Doug, a couple of things here that I'd love your comments on. First, her family history, which I think is quite important here. Her father was a vet and then became a janitor. Her mom had a minimum wage job in at Sears. And she points out that today, of course, there's no way a family could survive on a single minimum wage job, and then actually went that extra step to point out that families of color have it even harder. I thought that was pretty important.
Yeah, I mean, nothing but admirable, except when she said work hard and play by the rules, which is a weird evocation of Bill Clinton, who said that all the time, but
oh.
Still.
Oh, see, I didn't catch that. Wow, okay.
Yeah, but on the other hand, you know, her heart's exactly in the right place. A lot depends on the details of what she proposes to do about these problems, but she's certainly saying the right things. And of all the Democrats, she's certainly in the better tier of the Democrats. She's not Joe Biden or any of these other characters, or, you know, Beto, who is, you know, the fake Latino. I have nothing but admiration for on that. You know, her father was a salesman at Montgomery Ward, a now defunct department store chain. He got a heart attack, and the family was nearly ruined. And as she said, her mother got a job in Sears that saved them. But, you know, it was certainly America's always been really tough on the working class, but it was not quite as tough then as it is now. And I think she's onto something that it was a lot easier to get by on those sorts of jobs 40, 50 years ago than it is now. And I'm not sure you can go back and restore that environment. But, you know, these are really the questions facing much of the American population. People outside, you know, the top 20% really have a struggle to pay the bills. And that's what she's about.
Do you think that her launching her bid so early, I think there was only one other person, I think Julian Castro, who's launched an exploratory committee, but her putting it out there so early in the season can send a strong message to the Joe Bidens and even the Hillary Clintons and the rest of the Democratic Party that from here on out, this is where people want our politicians to have as a starting, at the very least, a starting point, that Elizabeth Warren is in some ways throwing down a gauntlet to the left.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, she wants to set the terms of debate, and there's a good chance she can have a very strong hand in doing that. Of course, Sanders really got this whole thing going in the Democratic field. And we can do comparisons of her and Bernie Sanders. I don't think she is, you know, supporting a Medicare for all. That might change over time. She is, I suppose, signing on with the Green New Deal in some sense, but exactly what that means, we don't know. A lot of her politics are pretty standard issue liberal. You know, her foreign policy is not so great. But on the other hand, these kinds of issues, the bread and butter issues that could really attract a lot of votes, she's saying the right things. Whether she'll do the right things, who knows? But she's certainly saying a lot of the right things.
She doesn't strike me as being too militarist. Just speaking of foreign policy, she has criticized the Afghanistan war and traveled there and even actually called for, recently on Twitter, called for troops to return home. She did, I understand, join in on the Yemen war resolution. Some people have questioned her issues, her position on Israel and Palestine, but in more recent years, I know Stephen Zunis, who's a frequent guest on our program and a Middle East expert, has said that her position is far to the left of 90% of most Democratic leaders on that issue. But of course, you know, she may, and this is where it gets into the debates that the left will have. Is she pure enough for us? And sometimes that can be a downfall for the left.
Yeah, you know, it's already started. I posted something on Facebook the other day where I said, it's like, I said up top of the show, I got to know her a bit, 15 years ago. I developed a lot of respect for her and a fondness for her. And there are so many worse Democrats around, and so many far worse, you know. And of course, then there's Trump. While we have our differences, I'm sure, in politics, I can't really be her enemy. And this was taken as an endorsement, and I was reminded of just how terrible the Democratic Party is and how terrible some of her positions are. People are saying she's indistinguishable from Netanyahu on Middle Eastern politics, which seems rather an exaggeration to me. But still, you know, we're going to have these fights. Some of them are good to have, some of them are bad to have.
Netanyahu? That's...
Yes, that, I got that comment, and there was some video that allegedly proved this, but I couldn't bear to watch the video. But, you know, I mean, that's nonsense. Bolsonaro and Trump are indistinguishable from Netanyahu, but I don't think you can say that about Elizabeth Warren. But she's actually avoided a lot of Middle East questions about the Middle East. Remember, there was that famous video a couple of years ago where reporters were chasing after her in the hallways of the Capitol, and she's like literally running away from them to avoid answering questions on Middle Eastern politics. I think she'd rather not talk about that. And sort of Sanders seemed rather uncomfortable with a lot of those issues, too. They want to talk about domestic U.S. politics. The foreign policy is a hard one. It's, there's this whole foreign policy establishment that will, you know, boil you in oil if you say the wrong thing. You know, even Trump is getting fried for, talking about getting out of Afghanistan, pulling out of Syria, and he certainly is not the kind of guy you'd think of as a peacenik. So it's a very, I can understand why a lot of politicians want to avoid the minefield of talking about these things. But, you know, you do have to talk about them, obviously, and have to do something about them. But, I think she really wants to focus on domestic American politics, you know, issues of economics and finance and class. And, that's refreshing.
Doug, let's talk about the disastrous DNA test video last year. We had covered that, speaking with a Native American journalist, and done an entire story on it. However, clearly she was getting some terrible political advice. And to me, what that video suggested was a sort of a naivete that you know, if you so early in your campaign, if the very first step toward a campaign is so disastrous, is so, you know, just a misstep, are you going to have the kind of strategic thinking that running a presidential campaign requires? She has sort of avoided talking about that DNA test. I think she realizes, she must realize how, what a mistake it was. Wouldn't it be better for her to just own up to the fact that it was a mistake, apologize to Native American communities, vow to actually take their issues seriously, and then get over it from there? Because otherwise it's going to dog her. That is going to dog her for the next 2 years.
Oh, absolutely. It was a terrible mistake. And, you know, she let Trump get into her skin with those Pocahontas taunts. Trump is really good at that sort of thing. You know, he's a moron and an ignoramus. But on the other hand, he is really a master of that kind of psychological terrorism.
She validated him by, I mean, that video that she released opened with his words.
Yeah, it's just crazy. She, you know, you should not let your enemies set the tone of the terms of debate. That's a very bad thing. And, you know, to bring up this genetics testing, being of Native origin is really not so much about your genes. It's about how you grow up and how people treat you, and the kind of life you have to live. And it's just not something that a DNA test is going to have any effect on. It's just the whole story of this, going back from the first time she allegedly made this claim, is such a bizarre mistake. And it seemed kind of dumb. I mean, I was always impressed by her intelligence, and for her to do something so naive and dumb really made me doubt a lot about her. I don't know what prompted her to do that. I do hope, like you say, that she just says, "I'm sorry, and I screwed up, and please forgive me." There's a lot to be said for an apology.
Exactly. That's usually the fastest way to move from a terrible controversy is to admit you screwed up. It usually does a lot to, you know, enable people to forgive you on that issue. I mean, and I am glad that she, and I think there's two things that she's learned from, and let's talk about the sort of Sanders thing, because a lot of people are going to say, well, these are two candidates that might be indistinguishable from one another. It seems as though Sanders, in running his campaign, very quickly learned, first of all, that you cannot ignore racial justice issues. When you recall, in 2015, he was targeted by Black Lives Matter activists, which led to him staking a clear position on criminal justice reform and racial justice issues and economic issues. And then she seems to have also learned from Sanders that you do need to have some kind of foreign policy position. Sanders has taken on leadership on the Yemen resolution. She sort of jumped onto that, and I think she might be trying more to have some foreign policy expertise. So is she going to face competition, of all people, from Bernie Sanders?
I guess. I mean, that's the way it's being framed. You know, they're fighting for the left wing of the Democratic Party.
Again, a good problem to have, though, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, people worry they're going to divide the vote, is going to hand the election to Trump. I don't know. I think it's good to have these kinds of fights. You know, I don't want to get too Darwinian.
Well, only one
about
nominee
it, but, you know,
can emerge from the.
Right. And, so, you know, I don't think this is the kind of fight that's going to provoke, you know, unhealable schisms or anything like that. Like, you know, the Sanders Hillary fight, certainly that persists. Yeah. But that was really about ideology, not just personality. That was a real split in the Democratic Party. It revealed precisely how orthodox many of the Democratic neoliberals were. You know, they were forced to run against anything mildly social democratic, despite all those years of saying, oh, we'd love to do these things, but we can't because of the Republicans. Sanders' advocacy of, you know, Medicare for all and free college tuition forced a lot of Democrats to admit, no, we really don't want these things. You know, you don't get things for free in America. That's not what America is all about. So that those are real ideological fissures. I suspect there are some ideological differences between Sanders and Warren. We don't know what those are fully yet. I imagine those will come clear in the coming months. But this is a good fight to have. And I don't think it's going to be damaging in the long term. And good God, anything that would lead to getting rid of Trump, not just getting rid of him personally, but, you know, eliminating that kind of politics, or really administering that kind of politics, a very severe defeat, that would be really, really welcome. And to me, that's why it's so important to defeat him politically and not through a special prosecutor or indictment or any of these sorts of these like deus ex machina moves. We really need to defeat this guy in a political sense decisively and to drive that kind of politics back to the cave where it belongs.
Doug, do you think that with Elizabeth Warren setting the tone, setting the agenda, that she will not only make it very clear that this is where the conversation needs to be, but also provide an outlet for those millions of American women who 2 years ago were really hoping for the nation's first female president? She may have that one edge on a Sanders candidacy, and of course her relative youth compared to him. I mean, these are sort of these are issues that are more around identity politics, to use that phrase, rather than actual values. But do you think that it should play a role in our discussions, age and gender?
The age stuff makes me very uncomfortable, since I'm getting up there myself. We need somebody younger. It's nice to have a lot of young people. It's great to see a lot of young people entering politics. I am a big fan of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I think it's marvelous to see her on the national stage. Older people have a lot to contribute as well. So I really don't want to see things fights around that.
Well, Sanders has many, many years of experience on Warren being a lawmaker, right? And he has experience now under his belt running for president.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very experienced guy, and he's had some impact in the Senate. She's relative newcomer in the Senate. She was a law professor for years, and that's a very different, lots of experience doing that, but that's a very different kind of experience from being a legislator and being a professional politician. We love to demean professional politicians, but it does require some skill and experience to do that sort of thing. And the gender issue, people accused me of misogyny for being so critical of Hillary, and they say, well, you say you want a woman president, but you'd say you just don't want this woman president, so what woman would you want? I'm not sure I'd go knocking on doors for Elizabeth Warren, but I'd certainly welcome her election. If it were her versus a Republican, if that Republican were Trump or anyone else plausible, then I would certainly welcome her victory. So, yeah, it would be great to have a woman president. And if it's going to be anyone in the current crop of candidates, I couldn't think of a better one than her.
Some have sort of fantasized about I know this is so early to talk about these issues, but again, good problems to have. Some have fantasized about a Sanders-Warren ticket. What do you think?
Yeah, they have done that. That would, of course, who would be on top? I don't know.
Right. Didn't she come under a lot of criticism for not endorsing Sanders when he was a candidate in June of 2016? She chose to endorse Hillary Clinton, even though Sanders's politics were so much more in alignment with hers than Clinton's.
Yeah, she did get criticism for that, and rightly so. She and Clinton were never very close. I don't think they like each other very much. Their politics are clearly rather different. There's that great video from 2004 or so, where Warren is talking to Bill Moyers about how she schooled Hillary on the bankruptcy reform issue, and Hillary understood it, and then Hillary voted with Wall Street for bankruptcy reform. She did a very good job of recounting that. It was clear that she didn't think much of Hillary's, shall we say, flexibility on the issue. If you can understand careerist reasons, that if she wanted to stay in good with the Democratic Party and possibly run herself in the future, a Hillary endorsement was the politic thing to do. It would have been nice to see a little more courage on that, a little more willingness to go against the grain. But, being a professional politician requires lots and lots of compromises. Sanders is unusual that he makes fewer compromises than many of his colleagues do. I guess she's a little more standard issue than he is.
Do you think that Sanders would be a kind of a president or presidential nominee who would be more appealing to disaffected Trump voters than Warren? Or should we not even worry about that demographic?
Yeah, you know, people talk a lot about that Trump voter. And, you know, there are many kinds of people who voted for Trump. There are just hardcore Republicans who wanted tax cuts and deregulation, you know, your classic suburban middle manager type who would vote for a Republican no matter who it was. I think you had some very, very serious, like, you know, racists and xenophobes and neo-Nazis who are supporting Trump. And then, you know, that floating band of discontented people who have been treated very badly by the economy of the last decade or two who voted for Trump. Maybe you could shake some of that last group loose and vote for a kind of a Sanders or a Warren-style Democrat. But I'm not sure that's really the path to victory. I wouldn't want to exaggerate the importance of that demographic to Trump's base and to politics generally. I think you really need to excite your own base. I mean, part of the reason that Hillary lost is that she couldn't excite a lot of traditional Democratic voters to get off their couch and go vote for her. That was part of the problem. It wasn't that disaffected machinists in Ohio were alienated by her and voted for Trump instead. And it was really, you know, the black vote was down because of disappointment with her. There's just a lot of the urban vote was down generally because of disappointment with her. A lot of the upper Midwest, classic Democratic working class, you know, didn't vote for her. So I don't know. I wouldn't really want to go after those folks too intently.
Well, Doug, I want to thank you so much, as always, for joining us and sharing your insight with us. It's going to be an interesting 2 years.
Oh, God. Yeah, I think I need a nap now.
Thank you so much, Doug. Really
appreciate
it. Okay,
thank you for having me. Okay,
take care.
Bye.
Doug Henwood is a political economist, editor of Left Business Observer, author of After the New Economy, as well as My Turn, Hillary Clinton Targets a Presidency. He's also the host of a weekly radio show in Pacifica called Behind the News. We've been discussing Elizabeth Warren's presidential bid. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.